So when Connie asked me about a book to speak on, I was reading Big Magic by Elizabeth Gilbert. She's the one that wrote Eat, Pray, Love. And the Big Magic book is all about creativity. And it was very inspiring to me. It was very affirming. Some of the things, you know, I'd read in other places, like Julia Cameron, she certainly, a lot of the, you know, very much parallel ideas. But she has some great stories, and just, it was just good. It was just good to be in that realm of thinking about creativity and looking at it through her eyes. And she started her book talking about fear, because as most people who have ever tried to be creative know, that fear is a big obstacle to overcome when we're trying to be creative. And so fear can be seen in a lot of different ways. Julia Cameron, I think she would, from my recollection about when she talked about fear, she really brought it into the inner child within us. And some people would call it ego. But the inner child piece really resonates with me because it feels softer. Like to make your fear comfortable, to make the inner child feel comfortable with that you want to do something that brings you into the creative realm, which is also into the unknown. And that's why the fear creeps in, because anything unknown is fearful to a certain aspect of our being. But Elizabeth Gilbert reassures us that, you know, yes, fear has its place in our lives to keep us safe, but when it comes to creative expression, it really doesn't have a place. And she gives it a place of comfort, trying to make it feel comfortable. So she sees her life as kind of this road trip with three entities: herself, creativity, and fear. And so on this road trip, fear gets to come along, but and it does have a voice, but it doesn't have a vote. And it doesn't get to read the road maps. So it has no vote about, you know, where she's going, and it doesn't even get to fiddle with the radio. So I love that, you know, that it's not creating, it's not having an impact on the atmosphere in the car. So, and she also sees fear like a song that has one note and one word, and that word is stop. Because when you let fear rule, it's like stop, stop, stop. It stops you from doing the things that you want to do, and it will keep your life very uninteresting. So I thought that was a nice way to look at dealing with fear. You know, okay, recognizing that it is part of our experience. It's part of our human experience to be fearful. And to decide, okay, when is it appropriate, really, to let this fear have a say? And so she's not saying that we need to be fearless, because fear does have a role to play in our lives in keeping us safe, but not to fight the fear, to make the fear comfortable, so that you can do what you want to do without that voice in your head that says stop. And to, as far as research goes with the fear component, you may have heard me say this before, Brené Brown, who does the research on human experience through, you know, thousands of interviews, she says that 85% of people have some kind of shaming experience when they're in school, and that changes the way that they see themselves. And 50% of these experiences create blocks in creativity that hold people back from creating expressing creatively as adults. And so some of the way to get around these blocks is to think of creative expression. If you think of like a divine idea, who does that belong to? Well, it belongs to spirit. So it's something that moves through you. It's something that is seeking out a receptive human to bring it into form. And I know, recently I heard Paul Simon even say that about songs, and you probably experience that with your music as well. And so when this divine idea comes to you, there's signals that it's something to pay attention to. I know some people will get like a feeling of the like energy moving up and down their spine, or goosebumps, or just the sense of knowing this is important. I need to pay attention to it. And sometimes this idea will come to you, and it'll just kind of it'll stay with you. It may even keep you up at night. And she said it's almost like falling in love. You know, you become obsessed with this idea that you want to bring it into fruition. You want to express it. You want it to bring this this fuller experience to your life. So I love this example from her book about the poet Ruth Stone, who is also a farmer. And her idea of, like a divine idea coming to her, it's like hearing a poem coming to her from across the landscape, like galloping horses. She would run home to get the poem down before it left her. It was like taking dictation. If she didn't get it down fast enough, she said sometimes she could like pull it back, and she was writing it backwards.
Wow.
Yeah, so that she was putting the last word of the poem first and writing it backwards. And that, to me, that's just fascinating. I mean, talk about really is like taking dictation, because she's not mindfully doing it. She's just putting the words down and then seeing how they fall into place. She also told a story about being on a commuter train where she fell asleep, she dozed off, and she had a dream that was a complete story, and when she woke up, she wrote it all down, and she ended up putting it in one of her books of short stories, and it required very little revision. I mean, it was just there. It was just, like a download that was given to her. But she said it was very different than the rest of the stories in her series, and people noted that, that was, it just had a different feel and everything, but I thought that was fascinating. Mm-hmm. And another story she talked about, she had this idea that came to her about, it was a novel she was going to write about this woman, this middle-aged woman who was in love with her married boss, and he got involved in this, some kind of deal in the Amazon jungle. And the deal went awry, and he sent her down there to investigate it. And so she had done some research about the Amazon and things like that, and she'd worked on it for a while. But then stuff happened in her life, and she got distracted from it, and she didn't work on it for, I don't know, it could have been a year or longer. And she has lunch with a friend who's also a writer, and this friend's all excited, and she said, "Hey, I'm starting this new novel," and she starts telling her the plot, and it's about a middle-aged woman that goes to the Amazon. And she's like, "What?" She could hardly believe it. It was, the details were different, but the plot was very similar. And so she came to the conclusion that her belief about the way creativity comes, that divine idea came to her, but she didn't bring it to form. She didn't finish it. So it went to somebody else who would. And so, I mean, she could have been angry about it and felt cheated, but to her, she said it was like a miracle. Huh. It was a miracle because someone else got to use that idea. And she just, she didn't bring it forward. And that, she also mentioned how the, scientists, more than one scientist at the same time will have the same discovery.
Mm-hmm.
And it's the same kind of thing. Now, to me, when something like that happens, I think that spirit, bringing it to more than one scientist, not only hoping that one will grab it, but if multiple grab it and have the discovery, it has far greater credibility. And so that scientific discovery will move forward more quickly because it's being affirmed in multiple by multiple scientists. So her ideas about divine ideas are that they're alive and that they seek the most accessible human collaborator. Ideas have a conscious will and can move from one soul to another. Ideas seek the swiftest and most efficient conduit to earth. So if you feel this idea come to you, a divine idea, it's okay to say no. Because sometimes ideas come and we're just not ready. We're just not in a place to devote time to it. But she says when she does that, she's very conscious that she's saying no, and she's very conscious of being compassionate to the idea that, she's sorry that she can't embrace it and help move it forward. And she might even suggest another person who the idea might go to. And I thought, wow, that's fascinating. Yeah. When thinking about artistic expression, there is a myth in our culture, maybe in our world, about, you've heard of the suffering artist. And she said this is not something that anyone should embrace as truth, that we do not have to suffer to create. Now, I will say that suffering can certainly bring forth creative expression, because those dark nights of the soul can lead to insights and be very meaningful. And for me, that things that are really meaningful are the things that inspire me. And so, but meaningful doesn't have to be sad. Meaningful doesn't have to be traumatic. Meaningful can be joyful, expansive, exciting, interesting, just taking you to a greater depth about your life and about life in general. So those are the things that will inspire me when I have meaning. And meaning is such a subjective thing. So, Connie and I will laugh because we say we're so easily entertained because we can find meaning in some very simple things. And meaning in nature, and that's why I take people on retreats, because I've had the experience of nature speaking to me through, spirit speaking to me through nature, and what a wonderful mystical experience that is. But I'm attaching meaning where somebody else, if you're not looking through that perspective, you might not see the meaning there. So it takes some practice, perhaps, or just being open to the possibility. I think it's just opening to the possibility, being willing to receive guidance through nature. But it's when I find meaning that inspires me to want to share it and perhaps write about it. I mean, if nothing else, write it in my journal so that, it's like I want to record it. I don't want to forget it or talk to somebody about it because if I'm finding meaning and it's like guidance kind of experience, it's beyond the realm of what feels ordinary, then to me I'm demonstrating what's possible. And I almost feel like I have a responsibility to share that, because not enough people understand that what is possible and live with just a lot of ideas of limitation and fear and just kind of the downtrodden way of viewing the world. So I think the more that those of us that are inspired through whatever, creative expression, nature, whatever it might be, I think really we have a responsibility to share that as a gift to the world. So as far as creative expression goes, if a lot of people, when they do some kind of artistic creation, they want to share it and be successful. And of course, everybody wants to be successful. But when it comes to creative expression, Elizabeth Gilbert really feels like success is not the point. The point is to express yourself. And Brené Brown talks about our deepest desire is a sense of belonging and to be loved, and that we access that most easily when we're authentic. And, you know, if you're sharing it creatively, to me, that's an ultimate expression of authenticity. It's also, it also makes us very vulnerable, because if we express something and we don't get, you know, positive feedback, or people don't like it or they don't get it, it can be a disappointment. But it shouldn't be a shameful thing. And she says that we want to have a sense of belonging and love so much that we will try to fit in order to be accepted. And ironically, that, because we're not being authentic, people pick up on that, and we're not accepted because we're not being authentic. So it's a real, it's an interesting thing to think about, that to risk being authentic, we also risk being rejected. But if we're rejected, it's different than if we're trying to fit in and we're rejected, because we didn't think we were worthy to fit in the beginning. So it really comes down to accepting ourselves and accepting that when we create, when we're creating something and we share it, that it's not really ours. It belongs to spirit. And so that kind of takes us off the hook, takes the ego off the hook, takes the inner child off the hook from being fearful, because it's not really ours. And the Romans, Elizabeth Gilbert talked about, the Romans had this belief about every household had a genius elf.
Cool.
Yeah. And so when someone was very gifted, they said that, I'll have to look at my notes to get this right. They said that they had genius, which is different than being a genius. You know, it was like the influence of this entity of genius was like almost like a muse that was supporting them, rather than them being the genius. And I think that's a really interesting and helpful way to view creativity, because if you think it's all you, there's so much pressure. So much pressure to be great. And if you've had a success, there's so much pressure to continue to be great. And she talked about Lee Harper, who wrote To Kill a Mockingbird, and how she was, this, I think that was like her first book, and it was the only book she ever wrote.
No, she's written.
Oh, has she written more?
She wrote one before.
Oh, okay. All right, so that was maybe her second book. But it was so successful that she never wrote another book, because it was like she didn't think she could do anything better. And that's not the point of creative expression. You're not in competition with yourself. You're allowing yourself to have the experience because it's worth having the experience. And it's worth the experiment of having the experience. Now, Elizabeth Gilbert calls this book Big Magic, because we certainly, the opportunity to have the magical experience in creative expression is always there, but it's not a continuous thing. And so she says, you know, to live a creative life, you need to be working at your craft, having a discipline, whether you're feeling the magic or not. And I think for those of us that have felt that magic, it's like spiritual practices. You're dabbling in the spiritual realm with prayer and meditation and, you know, other spiritual practices. You're dabbling in that realm with the intention of having a feeling of connection. And because you're in that realm and you're open and you're willing and you're actively dabbling in it, you're active in it, you're bound to have that experience. But it doesn't happen every day, not for me anyway. Maybe for some people it does. But because it happens often enough, I'm willing to continue to dabble. And it's the same thing with creative expression. You may not feel that divine idea all the time, but it comes often enough if you're dabbling in it. But if you're not, you're not going to have that, I don't think. I mean, not to say that you couldn't have, you know, just out of the blue, some incredible mystical experience of inspiration that would cause you to be creative. I'm not saying that's not possible, but I'm saying it's more likely if your intention is to invite that kind of experience into your life, and by being creative, by putting yourself in that creative realm, by practicing. Some people would call that, when you're in that magical realm, as being in the zone, like an athlete, that, you know, the athletes practice all the time and then they're in a game and things just flow effortlessly. They call it being in the zone. It's like they're just like on automatic, or almost like it's almost like someone else is controlling their body, that every shot goes in, everything is a win. It can be like that. So Elizabeth Gilbert says that living a fully creative life means working whether one feels the magical assistance or not. And she reminds us to look back historically to our ancestors. Probably we might have to go back a few generations to find the ancestors that were always creating. They were always making stuff because they needed to make things. But there was a certain creative element to that. And she believes that as humans, that element is a constant, that there is always an impulse to create, to make something. So it should just come naturally for us. And then there's a poet, David White, that Gilbert talks about, that he believes that there needs to be a willingness to have to feel personal entitlement, and that each of us is here and that we're allowed to have a voice and a vision of our own. And so this personal entitlement he calls an arrogance of belonging. That there is a divine force that will take you out of yourself and allow you to engage more fully with life by helping you take creative risks through releasing self-doubt and self-judgment. We come to feel protected not by saying, I'm the greatest, but by saying, I'm here. Therefore, I get to express myself. And so if we, you know, it's coming back to that notion that the creative expression is not us in our humanness. It's that divine force. And so if we can keep reminding ourselves of that, then the self-doubt and the self-judgment can kind of fall to the wayside, which is a lot of the fear. The fear comes up with when we have those doubts. It's the doubts are, you know, I'm not good enough. You know, who are you to be creative? Those kind of things that a lot of times come back from childhood or, you know, negative experiences that we've had. They are so unhelpful. Yes. So if that voice surfaces, Elizabeth Gilbert says to begin a statement with I am and fill in the blank. And so the I am statement will be all those divine qualities that we often hear about. I am creative, loving, willing, insightful, clear, inspired, open to new possibilities, bright, cheerful, generous, grounded, centered, powerful, open-hearted, expressive, intuitive, beautiful, one of a kind. And I would like you to just take a moment, maybe close your eyes, and just see what And there's so many more divine qualities than what I just listed. If you say to yourself, I am, and we're talking divine quality here, I am, fill in that blank. So we're going to come back to that idea when we go into the soundscape, affirming whatever has come to you right now. We're going to be using that I am as we go into a meditative state. So, when we're creative, we're definitely putting ourselves in a place of vulnerability. But as Brené Brown, she does a lot of research on being vulnerable, and that is some of the most sacred space to be in, is when you're vulnerable. And it's uncomfortable for most people. But she said every positive emotion comes from being vulnerable. Empathy, when you're in a place of empathy with someone, that means empathy means you're saying, me too. You know, you're willing to go to that vibration that is probably not a place where you want to be, but if you're with somebody who's struggling, who's in pain, that's what empathy is, to go there with them. Because it's in that, there's healing in that empathy that allows somebody to say, okay, I'm not alone in this, me too. I mean, you know, yes, we all experience that. That's extreme vulnerability. But there's vulnerability in creative expression, because you're putting out some of the deepest heartfelt ideas. And sometimes they can seem just crazy, weird. You know? I mean, when you're in a creative space, who knows what divine idea you might download that is far out and way ahead of its time. I think that's what happens a lot of times with these ideas. They're way ahead of their time, and so society or even your friends could look at it and go, well, that's different. You know, they're not always compassionate and supportive because they don't get it. And sometimes I think we don't even get it, but we're willing to be that vehicle of expression. Willing to be vulnerable ourselves in expressing things that perhaps don't make sense. So Brené Brown has some interesting mantras, and she has one for authenticity that I really like, but I changed it a little bit for creative expression. But I'll share the authenticity mantra for her is, don't shrink, don't puff up, just stay on your sacred ground. So don't shrink away, you know, don't hide. Don't make yourself look too big. Just be who you are and just stay on that neutral place. And so when I was thinking about that, for creative expression mantra could be, don't shrink, don't puff up, just know your creative expression was divinely inspired and worth the experience. It's worth the experience, regardless of how it's received. She also has a mantra for vulnerability. It's show up and let yourself be seen. So just showing up and letting yourself be seen and known. And we are known through our creative expression. I think that's allowing people to know something very deep about who we are and what matters to us, what we find meaningful. Okay, so just recently I did I offered a musical, what'd you call it? Musical experience, kind of a sing-along for the Life with Cancer program that I work with. And I teach yoga and meditation with them and do laughter yoga with them, but I've never done anything musical. I have no credentials. And so, but I also will speak occasionally with the Spirituality Quest group there. And so I asked the I asked Marcia, who runs that group, if I could bring a musical offering. And she said, oh, yeah, absolutely. Because I think, for me, music has been such therapy. I mean, when I go to choir rehearsal, I just leave there a different person. It's and so it was very well received. I brought, there was four other people from the Celebration Center choir that came with me, and so we taught them chants, and it was so funny because I was the only one, I think, in the group that hadn't had some kind of musical lessons. It was really ironic. So I was really with a great group to do this with, because, man, they were all musical. They picked up the chants, like, instantly. It was very fun. And they really appreciated me doing it, and hopefully something will come of that. So there again, you know, I followed the divine idea, and it was well received, and hopefully something good's going to come from that. But before I went, I wanted to find some kind of, you know, because when you're dealing with a, although life with cancer is very open to complementary kind of approaches that are helpful, it's still part of the Western medicine model overall, and so I wanted to bring some kind of research with me, and so I found this article by Maya Rogers. It's called The Healing Power of Voice, Seven Reasons Why Everyone Should Sing. And she lists some research that has been done that has shown that, you know, when we sing, we feel better. And, I mean, I know anybody that sings knows that. But, I mean, I know from my Life Force yoga training, where we do a lot of toning with sound and Sanskrit sounds, that moves energy. And so, you know, the sound is a vibration moving through your body. And then if you add a creative element to that, creative expression, emotional expression through your voice, that also has another level of impact. She talked about how we often will, you know, if we're feeling sad, that we'll sing sad songs. If we're feeling happy, we'll sing happy songs, and how that can help move us through emotions, and help us feel better and move forward in life. So there's all these, you know, these layers of how using your voice can be not only creative expression, but, you know, health-wise. And I'm not going to go through all of them, but she claims that everybody wants to sing. And some people would, you know, probably dispute that. And a lot of that goes back to childhood experiences where somebody probably told them that they couldn't sing. And he can, by the way, that's my husband. But somebody told him somewhere along the way that he couldn't sing, and so he very rarely sings. But he can carry a tune perfectly. But she's saying that physically, we are meant to sing. Our vocal cords are such that we are meant to make noise, sound, with our voice. And that it shouldn't really matter if it's... She's not saying everybody needs to be going to professional singing, but, again, it's worth the experience for the experience and not worrying so much about how it sounds. She said there was a YouTube video of this deaf woman singing. And there's even a disclaimer that, you know, she said, I don't know if I'm a good singer or not, but she's having fun singing. She probably, I mean, she can't hear her own voice, but the experience of vocalizing has a benefit. So what else? It's also good for the brain. The brain likes It can help you feel clear in your mind and creates new neural pathways. I mean, there's just all kinds of benefits as far as using your voice. So the last thing that I'd like to share with you is that after I read this book, I was really inspired to write something and put it out there. So this is a poem that I wrote. It's called Express Something. Beloved knows all that is, all that I am. Together we craft life, make changes, plod along, then sprint towards the rapture, the wonder. My feet land on firm ground, then confusion. Sacred stepping stones are strategically placed in every direction. Eeny, meeny, miny, mo. Sustain or create a new status quo. Momentarily, the same old creeps in, heart broken open with disappointment. Heaven shouts, express something, for God's sake. No, for God's delight. Finally, my compassion for being human comes. Even when I miss the mark, the urge celebrates the perfection within my missing, my falling, my failing, my crying. For God's delight. Ah, there, I see it, I feel it. I'm cradled in the hammock, the sacred bolts of fabric wrapping me in hues that soothe, sparkle, and comfort. It's just a poem. Just a creation allowed to move through us, through life. Let loose of it. It's the divine's. Let the next, and the next inspired idea come. One life together expressing. Sacred mystery moves to another idea, another poem, another piece of art, piece of God. Another something, infinite joyful creations, always being released. And so it is.
And so it is.
Beautiful.